Good afternoon, welcome in to another edition of The Scoop here on KLGR 1490 AM FM 95.9. A lot going on today's show. We've got John Folkey coming up at about 3:15, plus the Purple Pillage podcast here today. So we'll have all of that in the back half of the show. We'll be reacting to arguably the top story of the day coming from late last night. A major shakeup in the NFL, and one that is going to have a ripple effect on the Minnesota Vikings. So plenty to get to here today. Why don't we start off by taking a look at our top sports headlines? Taking a look at our top sports headlines here for today. The Washington Redskins have officially found their new starting quarterback. They traded last night tentatively because the league year doesn't start till March. They tentatively traded for Kansas City Chiefs starting quarterback Alex Smith for a third-round pick and a player, as well a bombshell announcement by the Kansas City Chiefs, as it looks like they are going to go with Pat Mahomes for the starting job next year. And for Kirk Cousins, that likely means he is done in Washington, which opens him up as a potential landing spot here in Minnesota. But a very strange deal, as the Redskins also trading away one of their top cornerbacks, signing Alex Smith to a contract extension that's going to guarantee him $97 million. So a big price paid by the Redskins, but that is part of what has now become the market rate for starting quarterbacks here in the NFL. So the Vikings looking very likely like they're going to have to make a decision as to if they want to go all in on Kirk Cousins and risk not being able to sign some core players down the road. It's going to be a fascinating debate to see if they make that call. Minnesota Timberwolves coming up just a bit short in the second game of a back-to-back tonight against Toronto. They lose by a score of 109-105. And now just 10 games over 500 on the season, 32-22 on the year. We'll talk a little bit more about that with John Folkey coming up at 3:15. The Gopher men's basketball team taking on Iowa last night, and the Gophers put up plenty of points, but they come up short last night. Final score of that game, Iowa puts up 90 points, and the Gophers fall to 14-10 on the season. So it's pretty much back to the drawing board at this point for the Gophers, as they're going to need a lot of help to resuscitate their season after losing 94-80 last night. Minnesota Wild get a win in the first game of the second half as Zach Parise scores in a shootout to give the Wild the win over Columbus, their first win in their first game after the All-Star break. And the Cleveland Cavaliers season gets worse. Kevin Love broke his hand last night and is expected to be out for 6 to 8 weeks. So one of the top supporting cast members of LeBron's Cavaliers is going to miss some significant time. And it just seems at this point like Cleveland's ship is taking on too much water for them to be able to salvage things here. So a lot of interesting things going on with our top sports headlines. Thursday Night Football also moving to Fox next season after Fox agrees to a deal to be the host of Thursday Night Football until, I believe, 2022. So that is something to keep an eye on as well. And James Harden had quite the night last night. 60 points in a triple-double effort. The first 60-point triple-double in league history, and leading the Rockets to a much-needed win last night as well. So all of that in our top sports headlines here today. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little Timberwolves basketball with John Folkey, and we've also got the Purple Pillage podcast on the way. All of that coming up after this.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. Your home for Redwood Valley Cardinal Athletics all season long. KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9.
And we're joined today on The Scoop by John Folkey of the Timberwolves Radio Network. John, thanks for joining me today.
Absolutely. Good to talk to you again, Seth.
Looking at where the Timberwolves are right now, they are coming off of a back-to-back against Atlanta and Toronto, and things not going the Timberwolves' way either night, as the Wolves end up losing both games. I want to start, John, just talking about that Atlanta game, the Wolves losing 105-100, and a rough night for Jeff Teague, to say the least, although one of those situations where his shot wasn't going, but you look at the box score and he still finishes with 10 assists. He had 4 steals as well and a block, so trying to get involved other ways, even though his shot wasn't necessarily falling against Atlanta.
Yeah, and I believe, I don't have the box score in front of me, but I want to say he ended up like a +5 or something in that ball game. And so, you know, obviously the shot wasn't falling. There were some costly turnovers late in the ball game. He tried an entry pass to Jimmy Butler that was deflected away, and Atlanta controlled it. And then not being able to get that ball inbounded on the sideline was a key turnover late in the ball game as well. So, you know, we tend to focus on those things, but you're right, active defensively, setting guys up, and I know he's kind of working through some issues. He's a little nicked up right now. And so if the shot's not falling, you've got to find other ways to impact the game, and he was able to do that. Now, you know, unfortunately, those costly turnovers at the end really kind of caught the eye of everybody. But, you know, it's hard to look at a game like that and say, well, it's all on Jeff Teague. I mean, that was on Minnesota as a group. You know, they built an 11-point lead in the third quarter. And Seth, for so long we've been talking about, you know, at the beginning of the season, Minnesota built these big leads, but they couldn't hang on to them. And it would, you know, end up in a real battle in the fourth quarter. Then we started to see the Wolves build a 10-point lead and extend that to a 20-point lead, a 24-point lead. And they were able to roll from there. But, you know, last night and the night before, Minnesota builds double-digit leads against Atlanta and Toronto, but can't extend those. And Coach Tibbs talked about it after the game in Atlanta, saying basically, you know, we had a couple opportunities when we got up by 11 to extend it, you know, to 13, to 15. And in those 3 straight possessions, they were unable to do that. And they allowed Atlanta to get a little confidence going and, you know, even though the Hawks had the worst record in the league coming into that game, those guys started feeling pretty good about themselves and feeling confident, and they were able to put together a big fourth quarter and pull away with that win.
John, looking at something that I've noticed the last couple of nights, and I think a lot of it just boils down to game flow, but you look at Karl-Anthony Towns over the last couple of games. Last night against Toronto, had 7 field goal attempts. And I think in the game against Atlanta, he had 8. And it goes to show you that when the offense is truly clicking, they're running it through Towns. And if teams are going to beat the Timberwolves or kind of take them off their rhythm, that is definitely a good way to do it, is to try to keep Towns out of the paint.
You know, it's funny because it's sort of a chicken or an egg kind of scenario, right? You want to get the ball into Towns, but in order to do that, you need him to be active to, you know, set up down there so that you can do that. And I think, you know, right now Minnesota's offense is a little bit out of rhythm in terms of, you know, the assist numbers. You'd love to see those assist numbers higher, because when that ball's moving, everybody's getting touches, you've got great balance and great flow offensively. And when, you know, for Carl, he's got to be able to position himself down low and, you know, set up there so that the guys can get a good angle to go into him and then, you know, go to work or get that ball back out. But while he hasn't had a ton of shot attempts, what I do like about what Cat's done here over these last couple games is, even though he hasn't, you know, been maybe getting spot ups on the block or things like that, he's attacked the glass, and he had 19 rebounds against, I believe it was Brooklyn on Saturday, with 10 of them coming on the offensive end. So, you know, if you're not able to establish yourself in there down on the post, like we talked about with Jeff Teague, find other ways of impacting the game, and Cat's been able to do that by really crashing the glass, and especially the offensive glass.
We look at what is coming up for the Wolves. They'll take on the Milwaukee Bucks tomorrow, and then on Saturday they host the New Orleans Pelicans. And first we'll talk about the Milwaukee game. The Bucks bring Giannis Antetokounmpo into the fold, and Giannis certainly one of the young superstars in the NBA right now. But what are some other things, John, that make Milwaukee such a difficult matchup?
Well, I mean, ever since they let Jason Kidd go, they've done nothing but win. They're 4-0 with Joe Prunty stepping in on an interim basis. So that's been impressive. And, you know, they've started to shoot more threes under Prunty. Their defense seems to have kind of found a groove after, you know, that was one thing that was sort of lacking at the end or the latter stages of the Jason Kidd era there in Milwaukee. And, the, you know, they were basically, from what I read and watched, you know, they were almost playing too aggressive defensively, and they were getting beat because of their aggressiveness. So anytime you've got a guy like Giannis with a unique skill set and the size that he has and the ability to hurt you in so many different ways, and then you add in, you know, Eric Bledsoe, who came over, and when Bledsoe came over from Phoenix in that trade early in the season, Milwaukee really started playing well, and then just, you know, in the last couple of weeks kind of fell off. And it resulted in Jason Kidd being let go. And, you know, Chris Middleton is a good player who can, you know, is one of the better two-way players. He can hurt you with the three. He's a good defender. So they've got a lot of talent on that team. And it kind of confused me, Seth, towards the end of the Jason Kidd era, when you hear Kidd talking about this group and he says, "We're so young. We haven't done anything." And you look at those guys, they're not young. You know, they're 4 or 5 years in the league, most of them. And Bledsoe's been in the league a long time. And true, you know, Bledsoe's a new addition. But this was a group that there were expectations for this team, and there, as there should be. You know, they've progressed. They've been to the playoffs 2 out of the last 4 years. They're not a young team, and you shouldn't be using that as an excuse. And so I think, you know, as they've turned the page kind of into this new era, those guys are recognizing those expectations. They're stepping up to them. And we'll see how long it lasts. I mean, we've seen this, you know, from a number of teams over the years where when a coach gets let go, team, you know, rises to the occasion, they win a couple, and then they settle back into who they are and who they've been throughout the course of the season. So we'll see if this is just that, you know, coaching change bump, or if this is a legit, you know, improved Milwaukee team.
Then on Saturday, the New Orleans Pelicans, and they're trying to find their identity after losing DeMarcus Cousins to an Achilles injury last weekend. They tried to trade for Nikola Mirotic, but that trade fell through. John, what sort of a ripple effect has Cousins' injury had, not only on the Pelicans, but throughout the rest of the West?
Well, it's crazy because, you know, number one, his injury sort of began a string of serious injuries across the league. And obviously they're not all related, but Cousins goes down with the ruptured Achilles. The next night, Andre Roberson, a huge piece of what Oklahoma City's been doing, goes down with a patella tendon injury. He's done for the season. John Wall is out 6 to 8 weeks with a knee procedure. And then last night, Kevin Love breaks his hand, and he's out 6 to 8 weeks. So it's just crazy how in the span of a couple of days, we've seen major injuries to major pieces of teams, of playoff teams. And it's just remarkable, you know, the bad luck and timing, because those teams were all, outside of maybe Cleveland, you know, we're playing very well right now. And, you know, the Thunder were able to win their next game without Roberson. They put together an 8-game winning streak, and they're a half game back of Minnesota. The Wizards, after losing John Wall last night, picked up a win over the Thunder. And then the Cavs, you know, they had 1-2 straight, and then they lose Kevin Love last night. I believe they lost to the Pistons as well. So, you know, injuries are playing a big, big role, not just in the West, but in the East as well. And, you know, as far as the ripple effect from Cousins' injury, it was interesting reading those reports about New Orleans trying to go after Mirotić, and that's exactly the type of guy that they should be going after. You know, a stretch four guy that's going to, you know, be able to play out on the perimeter and clear, you know, leave some space inside for Anthony Davis to go to work. And that's kind of what Cousins was trying to do. You know, his numbers were incredible this year. He was shooting more threes. He was helping facilitate. His assist numbers were at a career high. And so he was, you know, trying to be that outside threat that kind of balance out what Anthony Davis can do inside. And then the amazing thing with those two guys is you can flip them, and you can allow Cousins to go down low and bang, and Davis to be a threat from beyond the arc. It's something that, you know, isn't quite as consistent in his game yet, but something that he's been working to add on over the last couple of seasons. So I think, you know, as we head towards the trade deadline, which is coming up February 9th, I think teams are going to be kind of taking stock of where they are and what the landscape looks like. And, you know, for New Orleans, they want to get to the postseason no matter what. And at the time of Cousins' injury, they were sixth in the West. So they feel like they've got a good shot to make it there. Now with Cousins going down, they feel like they've got to get another piece, you know, to help them accomplish that. And so I would expect to see them as a team that's actively, you know, searching for help at the trade deadline. The LA Clippers situation is interesting because, you know, they were hanging around that eighth and final playoff spot in the West. And, you know, it was always curious because of all the injuries they had, what direction they would decide to take. Would they be buyers? Would they be sellers? And I think what we've seen is they're trying to balance, you know, the short term with the long term, in that, you know, they trade away Blake Griffin, they get some nice young pieces kind of centered around Tobias Harris. But they also get some draft picks. And so if they can hang around that eighth and final playoff spot in the West, maybe this group with Harris and Austin Rivers and, you know, the rest of the guys that they have, maybe Doc can get them to the postseason. And then in their back pocket, they've got, you know, the draft pick coming down from Detroit and a second-round pick on the way as well. So they're trying to balance the short-term with the long-term. So it'll be interesting here as we get closer to the trade deadline, to see what teams feel like they have a legit shot at being a playoff team and making a run, and which teams kind of look at it as, all right, you know, we got here, but even if we do make it, you know, we've got to balance the long-term with the short-term. And sometimes that long-term view means getting a good draft pick and developing guys rather than, you know, trying to sneak in at that eighth spot and not getting as high a draft pick, or maybe not developing your guys over the rest of the season.
John, I know there is a little bit of time before the trade deadline, as you mentioned, and the Timberwolves may be in a spot to make a deal, but they don't have a whole lot that they can give up in return. But at the same time, you look at what they've got on the bench with Gorgie Jang, Nemanja Bjelica, Tyus Jones, Jamal Crawford. It seems like their bench is pretty set and pretty solid when everybody's playing well. Do you see any sense, or do you get any sense that the Timberwolves may make a move before the deadline?
If they do, I imagine it would be a very minor move, you know, maybe to add some depth, because, you know, the thing of it is, everyone wants a big trade at the trade deadline, right? Like, let's go out and get this guy, let's go out and get that guy. Well, the problem with that is you got to give something up. And when you look at the Wolves roster, who do you want to give up? Tyus has played great in that backup point guard role, and he's shown that he can play, you know, big minutes as a starter as well. Belly, when healthy, really helps that second unit. He can spread the floor. His size, his ball handling, all those things are great assets to Minnesota. And you love Crawford's veteran leadership and fearlessness. Shabazz Muhammad has even worked his way back into the lineup. I like what Marcus George's Hunt brings. But, you know, in terms of trading either of those guys, what's your return on that? What are you going to get back? And it's probably not going to be, you know, a big-name superstar-type player. And then out of the starting five, I can't imagine any of those guys on the move at the trade deadline. So, you know, if they do make a move, I would expect it to be a minor move. But, you know, the other thing we have to remember, Seth, is down in the G League, the Wolves have Justin Patton, their first-round pick from this past year. Plus, they've got two two-way players in Anthony Davis and Emile Jefferson. And both those guys have played very well down at the G League level, and they'll get an opportunity to come up here later in the season to help fill out that Wolves bench. So, like I said, if Minnesota does do anything, I would expect it to be a very minor move just because of the guys that you do have and your core group and, you know, the way the bench plays when healthy. You don't necessarily want to give up too much to bring somebody back in, you know, especially when this group is sitting in the four spot in the West.
Yeah, it's a nice spot for the Wolves to be. They don't really need to make any moves, so we'll see. But again, a long time before the trade deadline, as there's still a few weeks even before the All-Star game. So we'll see how things shake out there. John, thanks for joining the show here today. Great stuff as always from you, and good to talk Wolves basketball with you here today. We'll catch up with you again down the road. Hopefully the Wolves can get back on a nice little roll here over the next few games.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it, Seth.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. Miss today's episode of The Scoop? Find each and every episode on myklgr.com under the Sports tab.
Touchdown!
This is The Purple Pillage with Neil Roberts and Lee Bakken. The Pillage starts now.
And welcome to another edition of the postseason Purple Pillage. I'm Leif Bakken with Neil Roberts. This one brought to you by Four Bears Casino and Lodge, located 4 miles west of Newtown, North Dakota. Neil, a lot on our plate the week of the Super Bowl. Some different things with the Pro Bowl. We're going to talk a little offensive coordinator situation, and then we'll talk Super Bowl and the player of the week, or the player to watch. But let's start off with the Pro Bowl, Neil. Harrison Smith, Adam Thielen for the Vikings showed up and looked pretty good this week.
Pretty good. Yeah, where was that? 2 weeks ago, right?
No kidding.
So Harrison Smith with a pick six, Thielen with a touchdown reception from Drew Brees, and yeah, those guys played great. Congratulations to both those guys. They've had a great season for the Vikings and worked very hard, and there's a reason they're where they're at right now in their respective careers. And so hats off to Harrison Smith and Adam Thielen. Yeah, Pro Bowl. I don't usually watch them. I did not watch this one, but it was fun watching the Vikings in the highlights for sure. And I forget, the post-game reporter for ESPN said something along the lines to Von Miller, you know, played in a game despite where no one goes 100% or something to that effect. And Von Miller, really, no one goes 100%? And he said it out. But anyway, but yeah, it's, you know, guys want to avoid injury. And where baseball is a little different. I mean, the guy that throws 100 miles an hour is going to throw 100 miles an hour at the mm-hmm. baseball All-Star game. But the guy that runs a 4.340 might not run that 4.340 over the middle of a Pro Bowl. You know, the Super Bowls, and plus the Super Bowl's looming. So it's just putting a pecking order of importance of games too. But all in all, yeah, it was a fun one this year, seeing the Viking players do well despite a losing effort.
We'll come back to that in just a little bit. Let's talk about something I wanted to talk about last week, Neil, and that's Pat Shurmur is getting situated with the Giants right now, and that means that the Vikings are talking to guys and seeing who they want to bring in as their offensive coordinator, and there were four guys on the list. We're recording this on a Tuesday afternoon, and the announcement could be made anytime this week about which one of these guys it's going to be, and that includes their own quarterback coach, Kevin Stefanski. Mm-hmm. Daryl Bevel was one of the guys as well. Sean Ryan from the Houston Texans. And then Dan Campbell from New Orleans. So kind of up in the air, but we think that Bevel might not be their option.
Yeah, I don't know. And we talked before. I kind of like Mike McCoy, actually, from San Diego, but he is now with already the Cardinals gobbled him up. So he was really never mentioned. But it just seems like that Zimmer wants to hand this over, the car keys, to somebody and tell them it's their deal. And he doesn't step in unless he has to. And like he did when they made the change from Turner to Shermer, you know. And is Stefanski ready for that? Probably is. Is Bevel your guy? Well, if he was, why'd they bring in Campbell and Ryan then? And they could have already named this position like Arizona did, but they've decided to bring four people into the mix. So you ask, why are they doing that? So I think you might be right, Leaf. Maybe Daryl Bevel is not their favorite. Who knows? Maybe he is. And Stefanski, I think, is still a strong candidate. So we'll see where this goes. But according to some publications, it sounds like, you know, we're, like we say, we're discussing this on a late Tuesday afternoon, and this could be announced as early as tonight or tomorrow. Who knows? Maybe it extends a week. They don't like any of them. But I'm guessing one of these four guys will be the old coordinator by the end of the week.
You know, all four guys, strong resume. Mm-hmm. But the one thing question I have is, if they do take Stefanski, can they hire one of the other three guys for their quarterback position?
Well, that remains to be seen as well. I mean, they're already probably at a similar position, so I'm guessing not. I mean, Bevel's a guy out of a job right now. I think the other two guys are being interviewed while they're still employed by the respective teams. So maybe Daryl Bevel might be looking at a quarterback's job. I'm sure he'd prefer to be a coordinator somewhere. So we'll have to wait and see on that note, Leaf. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do with that quarterback's job if Stefanski is promoted, for sure.
Player to watch this week, brought to you by Four Bears Casino and Lodge. Rodney Carrington going to be at Four Bears Casino February 17th. Get your tickets now. Neil, who is your player to watch for this Super Bowl?
I think based on the Viking game, Leaf, it's got to be Nick Foles in my book. If he comes in and throws a great deep ball and throws a great short ball and is just looking off guys and still hitting his secondary and third receivers and plays a game like he did against the Vikings, the Eagles will be tough to beat. And if he doesn't, and he turns the ball over to New England several times, like Case Keenum did to the Eagles, then it swings the other way in a hurry. I guess he's the big X factor for me, is Nick Foles going into this one. What do you think?
I'd have to agree. I mean, Nick Foles is one of the guys that he's got to make it happen, at least on my end. I don't like the Patriots, so I hope he can make it happen. And
I'll give the Eagles this. I mean, their O-line has played really well this season. Their defensive line has played well. In the trenches, I think they'll match up okay against New England. It's the skill position players, the team that makes the fewest mistakes and the fewest mental errors, I think will come out on top.
Player to watch this week, Nick Foles, brought to you by Four Bears Casino and Lodge. Well, Neil, talk a little Super Bowl. It's going to be the Eagles and the Patriots, and if the Pro Bowl has any indicator, it's going to be a close one, but unfortunately the Patriots win.
Yeah, could be again. And no, the Patriots really a team of streaks. The last two big games, you know, look at their playoff game last week. They got behind the Jaguars. Look at the Super Bowl a year ago. They got way behind the Falcons and came back. And we talked about this before. You know, it's not that easy to always get that switch turned on. And one of these times, they just won't be able to get the momentum back, like late in the season against the Miami Dolphins. You know, they end up getting beat horribly by the Dolphins. And at some point, you just thought, well, Brady's going to get going here pretty quick. And he just never got it going that game.
Unlike the championship game between the Eagles and the Vikings, Neil, I think this one's going to be an offensive battle.
Bring up a good point, Leaf. You never know, and with New England especially, reading the over-under sometimes is really hard if it's going to turn into a defensive game or offensive game. And lately, it's turned into where the defense might hold its own early, and then the offenses flourish in the second half. But it'll be interesting, and it's still a little anticlimactic for me. But by Sunday, I'm guessing I'll be ready to watch some football.
And I hope the rest of the Purple Pillage Nation is ready to watch Super Bowl 52 from U.S. Bank Stadium as well. With that, we're going to close this one up. Thanks to Four Bears Casino and Lodge for making this possible. Next week will be the final episode of the Purple Pillage. But until then, for Neil Roberts, I'm Leif Bakken. Pillage on!
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. Catch The Scoop Monday through Friday from 3 to 4 p.m. on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9.
back here on The Scoop, a massive trade, quote-unquote trade, as trades cannot be agreed upon until the start of the new league year, which is in March. But nonetheless, the Washington Redskins officially end the Kirk Cousins era by trading a third-round pick and cornerback Kendall Fuller to the Kansas City Chiefs in exchange for Alex Smith. Smith then signing a four-year contract extension with the Redskins. His new deal will be 5 years, $111 million, with $94 million in guaranteed. I believe it's $94 million in guaranteed money, but it could be more like $70. Nonetheless, a massive shocker, as it seemed pretty likely that the Chiefs were going to move on and they were going to give Pat Mahomes a chance to start, but it didn't really ever get to the point where you thought that Alex Smith was a viable option for the Redskins. I had pegged it that that would be a good spot for Case Keenum to go if Kirk Cousins didn't re-sign, because that was a team that was looking to win now, and Keenum could go and take similar money to what they had given Cousins the last couple of years. But now that's out the window, and you're paying Alex Smith to be a $23, $24 million quarterback for the next couple of seasons. Now, Smith is certainly no slouch. He's coming off of a career year, 4,000 yards, 67.5% completion percentage, 26 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, quarterback rating of 104.7, and he was one of the most accurate deep ball passers in the entire NFL. Pretty easy to do when you've got weapons like Kareem Hunt, Tyreek Hill, and Travis Kelce. Now going to a Redskins team that has the likes of Chris Thompson, who will be a very reliable pass-catching option for Smith. Also Jordan Reed, assuming he's able to stay healthy, and also receivers the likes of Jamison Crowder and Josh Doctson. So some talented players for Smith to work with, but some real questions at the offensive line position. And that, I think, was something that always has held Washington back, is injuries to offensive linemen and also just the offensive line play in general. Smith is mobile. He can run when needed, so that will help him succeed in that regard. But it really is going to be fascinating to see how this plays out. You've got a guy who is coming off of a career season, and it's very similar to the way that the Vikings are going to have to approach the Case Keenum situation. He's coming off of a career year. You don't know if you're going to get the player more like how they performed early on in the season or in their career, as opposed to this one season. So that's a big question that the Vikings have to wrestle with. And now it puts Kirk Cousins squarely in the realm of possibility for the Vikings. They've got $57 million. In cap room to play around with, and a few players that they will need to allocate money to extend: Anthony Barr, Stephon Diggs, Danielle Hunter, and Eric Kendricks as well. But what was one of the things that really held the team back late? It seemed like the quarterback play started to slip a little bit late in the season. Now you had defensive lapses as well, quite a few of them in that Saints game and also in the Eagles game as well in the playoffs. But a quarterback that could come in and be a steadying force, not prone to as many highest of highs, lowest of lows type moments. Cousins has been very steady throughout his career. And I think the fact that he has performed at the same, pretty much same caliber for the last 4 years, I think that helps his case as well, because you are pretty solidly going to get 4,000 passing yards and about 25, 26 touchdowns and 10, 11, 12 interceptions. That seems pretty set as to what you're going to get out of him. You don't have the potential for there to be those 380-yard, three-touchdown games, and then the next week throwing for 100 yards and two picks. There's not going to be the potential for those swings in performance. I think Cousins is a little bit more consistent in his quarterback play. The big downfall with Cousins is going to be the amount of money that it costs to get him to sign, because you're going to have to sign him to likely a five-year deal. And it's going to be for more money than Matt Stafford got from the Detroit Lions. So it's going to take a massive commitment to bring in Kirk Cousins. And, you know, $30 million a year, $28, $27 million, somewhere along those lines. That is a lot of money to shell out to a quarterback. I mean, you look at what Alex Smith just got from the Redskins. Again, theoretically, because no trades can be agreed on until the start of the new league year. But theoretically, Alex Smith getting $24 million feels like a lot for me. And it just, the quarterback market is drastically changing. The money is getting further and further out of control. But that's the price you have to pay if you want to get a quarterback that can potentially lead you to a Super Bowl. You've got to be willing to pay up and sacrifice other areas. Now, I think the Vikings are more likely to stay in-house and use some of that money to re-sign their core players. It would be very unfortunate to lose any of Anthony Barr, Stephon Diggs, Eric Kendricks, Danielle Hunter. They all play very pivotal roles on the team, and especially Danielle Hunter on the defensive line coming into his prime. So it would be very unfortunate to lose any of those players, but that's the trade-off. There really is no other option. It's either you go and you spend a lot of money on a quarterback, and then one of those guys will end up signing somewhere else, or you end up saving a little bit of money, re-sign the other guys, but then you're not going to come away with a Kirk Cousins. It's entirely possible that the Vikings use the franchise tag on Case Keenum, which would pay him around $23 million for 1 year. But then again, you're right back where you were right now. You're right back where you were next year with having to wonder, is Case the guy? And you're basically playing it the exact same way that the Washington Redskins did the last couple of years, by just franchising Kirk Cousins and really not allowing the problem to be fixed. So I find it really bizarre, too, in this trade that the Redskins were so willing to part with one of their young, promising defensive players in Kendall Fuller. I'm not the only one who's perplexed. Washington safety DJ Swearinger was pretty upset on social media. I won't read the tweets, which have been deleted, but he was pretty upset to find out that Fuller was part of that trade. And poor Fuller, he himself found out on social media, was not even notified by the team until after he had found out on social media that he was traded, and initially thought that it was someone else, but then had the news broken by Adam Schefter that, yep, he's the one that was traded. So a tough situation there, but this is kind of how Washington has done things. This whole Kirk Cousins situation was pretty messy, And it got to the point where they just felt like it was easier to move on than it was to try to bring Cousins back. So there'll be plenty of teams that line up to try to sign Cousins. The only two teams that have more room in terms of salary cap than the Vikings are the New York Jets and the Cleveland Browns, who could both be major players for Cousins' services. Cleveland has been going through quarterbacks like they're going out of style over the last several years. So they could certainly make a play for Cousins to try to finally get this position filled. And the Jets as well. Josh McCown is entering the twilight of his career, and they could elect to try to go with a more stable option. You've also got teams like Arizona, another possible landing spot, and plenty of others that will be looking for a starting caliber quarterback for their team. So this is just the beginning of how this is going to all play out. And these trades always interesting to see who ends up coming out on top. My guess is that the Chiefs are going to be the ones who get the better end of this deal. But that remains to be seen. We will take a look at what's on deck for tonight after our final break. More is next here on The Scoop.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9 is radio you can depend on for sports and play-by-play.
Let's take a look at what's on deck here for tonight. We'll start off in the NBA, taking a look at the schedule. Memphis at Indiana tonight at 6 o'clock. The LA Lakers at Orlando at 6 o'clock. Charlotte at Atlanta at 6:30. Philadelphia's at Brooklyn at 6:30 tonight. Miami at Cleveland at 6:30. The New York Knicks at Boston at 7. Chicago is at Portland at 9. And Dallas at Phoenix at 9:30. Over to Big Ten men's basketball for tonight. Penn State at number 5, Michigan State at 5:30, Maryland at number 3, Purdue, that's at 7:30 tonight. And to the NHL, the New York Islanders at Toronto at 7:30 Eastern, San Jose is at Detroit at 8 Eastern, and Philadelphia at Washington at 8 Eastern as well. That is a look at what's on deck. It's time for us to wrap it up. That does it for The Scoop here today. Drew Mahold will join the show tomorrow to talk Super Bowl. So make sure to stay tuned. Another edition of The Scoop comes your way tomorrow at 3:05.